Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnocky, and as always, I'm here with Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Jess. I'm Matt. I'm Matt Stewart. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us, one and all.
Oh,
great to
nice.
Be in.
It's so good to be in. Do you know what this is all about, this show?
Well, look, I've tried to explain what I think it is.
Yep.
But I struggled, and to be honest, so did both of you.
No. Thank you.
Jess, we delegated and then we had a meeting.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And said, never again. Then we said, all right, let's give Matt a shot. And he jumped in and we said, oh my God.
Oh boy.
I thought that there was, you know, rock bottom, but wow, he lifted up the ladder.
Yeah, we got into
found the ladder underneath the floor.
got down to the molten core.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh,
a little rhyme there, it's fun.
So what I did a few weeks ago is I, you know, semi-jokingly said, hey, if there's any, you know, musos out there that listen to the show that want to write a little 60s style jingle, like a sitcom theme song that explains the show for anyone who's never heard it before. And multiple people have sent them in. And I think we have another entry this week.
Yeah, we do have another one. This one comes in from Matthew Abad from Seattle. I pause slightly before reading out his surname because he's given me the pronunciation. He knows me well.
Yeah, right. What were you going
to
say?
Matt Abad. I might have said, I reckon I would have gone close to that, actually. It's a four-letter word.
Yeah, right.
Matt, come on. Give me a chance.
Did he say how to say Matt? Because that is Matt, when you know you've really stuffed up. They're telling you how to say your own name.
Martabard. Mortarboard. Matt Abad. Oh, fuck. I did fuck it up. Matt Abad. So, hit it.
If this is your first time joining us,
three friends, also comedians, take turns researching a thing.
One sport
tries to report
while the others
listen in and keep interrupting.
Hence the name,
Do Go On.
And it always starts with a question.
Oh.
Oh, that is cute as shit. That was amazing.
I loved that.
And honestly, that's the most 60s-esque one so far, for sure.
That was so good. Thank you so much, Matt Abad from Seattle.
So hopefully that's cleared up a few things for people who haven't heard it before.
Yes. And like Matt said, the episode does start with a question. I'm doing the report this week. Jess and Dave don't know what the topic is. That was all covered in the jingle. Why am I going back over it? So here's my question for you two. Stuart Smith is seen as an environmental terrorist in New Zealand. What kind of animal did he introduce to their ecosystem?
Oh.
What have they got? They don't like.
I mean, no one likes a rabbit.
That's true. And someone did introduce rabbits over there, but it was not this man.
Have they got do they have snakes?
No, they don't have any snakes.
I was like, I think that's why I was associating New Zealand with snakes. I was like, I'm pretty sure they don't have them.
I only just like that snakes. No. You
guinea
may be
pigs.
Closer. It's not guinea pigs. Think more
foxes.
Wet.
Foxes. More wet. Okay.
Stingrays.
Not stingrays. Think broader.
Think broader.
Broader, but wetter.
Even larger stingrays.
Fish. Yes, Jess, it is fish.
They had no fish there before.
They had fish.
Amazing.
But hang on.
Wow, New Zealand before?
They had some fish, but
he arrived. There's no snakes, no fish, no hills. It was just a flat land. Yeah. Nothing there.
Someone brought in clumps of dirt and made hills. Yeah.
Wow.
And on the sixth day, he rested.
But that is a different story for a different day. According to the New Zealand official, quoted in an article on stuff.co.nz by Charlie Mitchell, this is one of the big articles about it. I'll quote Mitchell a lot. But in this article, a New Zealand official said, imagine if one guy was responsible for the introduction of rats, possums, rabbits, stoats and pigs to New Zealand. Stuart Smith was pretty much that guy, but he just did it to freshwater ecosystems around the country with fish.
What? Right. So he threw some foxes into a river.
Yeah, only they were fish.
Oh, okay. That clears that up. Right. So it's the equivalent.
Equivalent, that's right.
Yeah. Destructive.
Though I think for some reason, this guy, this official, didn't think people could understand just fish. So he put it in land animal terms.
Yeah. I am a bit confused.
I think people, well, it's certain kinds of fish.
Yeah.
Non-native fish.
Yeah. I was going to say, I reckon you'll clear it up.
Yeah, yeah.
With this report.
But I'm going to take it back a little bit, talking about Stuart Smith and how he came up, how he grew up, and then how he came to be the fish terrorists of New Zealand.
Wow.
Throughout the second half of the 20th century, New Zealand's waterways were invaded by thousands of introduced species of fish that have changed the environmental makeup of the country. This was the work of just one man, the New Zealand fish terrorist, Stuart Smith.
Fish terrorist is one of the lamest band names I've ever heard.
That was the name that the people voted for. 60% of patrons voted for it. And I kind of knew it when I put in the New Zealand fish terrorist. I'm like, this is going to get votes.
Because you're imagining like dynamite or something being put inside a fish. But that's, right. I imagine, not what's...
No,
here?
That's not what happens. Although quite a similar thing happens with a pig at one point. But we'll get to that. Smith was born in the East End of London in 1913. According to the Otago Daily Times, Smith's early life growing up in the East End of London was a happy playground where he had mastered the art of catching tiddlers in the sandhill ponds by the age of five. And this play developed into a lifelong passion.
Right, so he's a lifelong tiddler.
Yeah, he loved catching a tiddler.
Do you know what a tiddler is?
A tiny, just little fish. Or are you telling me it's something else?
No. Do you know what a tiddler is? No, I'm saying
Do you even know what a tiddler is? Name their first five albums.
Yeah, come on.
Apparently, there were lots of ponds around at that time in his neighbourhood as clay was being dug out to make brick houses. So that would leave divots in the ground, which would fill with rainwater, and then these little fish would... get in there.
How would they get in there?
And then kids, I guess they came in when they were real little in the rain.
Yeah.
And the kids
fish falling from the sky. Yeah.
You never believe it. There was fish everywhere. I said, get the bread. We'll have dinner.
Get the bread.
So, yes, somehow fish like gudgeon and roach would get in there and real beautiful.
Wow.
That was my nickname in high school. Gudgeon.
Your best friend roach.
Yeah. Saw the back of my Year 12 jumper. Gudgeon.
So he got really good at fishing these little fish at a very young age, and he soon figured out he could sell these fish that he caught with his homemade fishing rod, and he sold them to adults as live bait. Before long, he saved up enough money to buy a bike. Like he was a little kid just making cash.
Just hustling.
Pennies at a time sort of thing. Clearly a bright kid, Smith won a scholarship by age 11, according to a Radio New Zealand story on him. Life sounded pretty good at this stage, and his own diaries back this up. Later in life, he would look back on his London upbringing very fondly. But that was all about to come to an abrupt end. Smith later recalled that after turning 15, his father, quote, quite casually said to him, you're not going back to school. You're going to New Zealand. Just out of nowhere.
Yeah, okay. Oh, just over toast.
Yeah.
Oh, why are you in your uniform?
Him and his brother. Kids, they just sent him off to New Zealand.
Just the two.
Just the two. Yeah. So according to the Anarchist History of New Zealand website, New Zealand's Joseph Coates government worried about population decline at the time. The way this article describes it's like, this was the market going, we're about to crash. So people are having less kids because they can't afford them. But Coates comes in and goes, no, we need more kids. So they started trying to combat this by offering tax cuts to those having kids, as well as creating a bachelor tax on unmarried men. So if you were a man who wasn't married, you paid more tax.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that wild? The anarchist site says the message was clear. Take a wife, have more babies, grow this nation's population.
Wow, this really rolls off the tongue.
Feed children you can't afford to feed. Yeah.
They continue, this same logic applied to the idea of growing the New Zealand population by importing young men from Britain.
That's fucking crazy. We don't have children. Kids. Let's import some kids.
Isn't that wild?
That's
yeah.
crazy.
So they needed farm workers, and thousands of boys from poorer families in Britain were shipped down, including Smith and his brother. Their father, a gambler who had money troubles, probably saw it as a win-win. The boys would head off to New Zealand and get a job, and he'd have two less mouths to feed. Once arriving and getting to work, he found he wasn't a big fan of farming and spent all his free time on a local fishing boat pulling up snapper. He later recalled, I thought to myself, this is the life. Why would anyone want to farm when there's an ocean full of fish just waiting to be pulled up? He's just obsessed with fishing. Look at this. I don't know why. No, why are you bothering about land? You can come out here on water. Yeah. There's fish in
there. There's fish in there. Can you believe it?
Even more than the little tiddlers.
Yeah, look at the size of the tiddlers they got here.
They got big tiddlers.
Sorry, what did you say?
This bit's brutal. According to the Otago Times, farming did not work out for Smith. He quit after having to destroy his dog with a fence batten. The poor beast had bitten Smith after being caught in a trap. And he could see no alternative. Oh. He had to kill his own dog.
Oh,
oh my God.
Oh, so rough. He then tried moving into fishing full time. Around this time, he got to know a man named Jack Alec, the head of the local harbour board. Jack became a mentor for Smith, imparting both his fishing knowledge and political views. And before long, he'd converted Smith to communism. It's a twist you probably didn't see coming.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It was not how I expected that sentence to end.
Yeah.
For context, as Radio New Zealand put it, we're in the 1930s. Communists had swept to power in Russia, overthrowing what was widely seen as an autocratic and brutal regime. The rest of the world had yet to see the darker side of Soviet-style communism. For many people, communism looked like a way of the future, particularly when they saw how badly ordinary people were suffering in capitalist states during the Great Depression. Smith was amongst those who were swept up by the dreams of a communist utopia. He later became a member of the New Zealand Communist Party. So this kind of like this way of thinking about things kind of affected how he dealt with the fish and releasing fish in the future. And it probably led to him wanting to do it in a lot of ways.
Right. So he became a communist fisher.
Yes. He released those fish for the commie good.
Wow.
Red fish under the bed? No. So I reckon there's something there. You think of it though.
Don't set us homework mid-report.
While waiting for the utopia to arrive, he continued battling away trying to make a living in the fishing industry. Around this time, he was about to head out on a fishing job using explosives. But according to Radio New Zealand, a piglet got into his shed and ate his detonators. He was so angry that he kicked the pig, which then exploded.
No, the pig exploded. Oh my God.
That's one of the wackiest things I've ever heard. It feels like it's from like a teen gross out film sort of thing.
Yeah, he got mad, so he kicked a pig.
Which exploded. When World War II broke out in 1939.
No more information.
I couldn't leave it out.
No, you
once
have to
I heard
put that
I'm
in.
Like, I have to put that
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So World War II broke out in 1939 and Smith was called up for service. He wanted to volunteer for the Navy but was instead enlisted in the Army. He didn't like this at all.
Because, away from the fish.
And the sea.
I know, that's what I thought at first. I'm like, obviously he wants to be on the sea where the fish are. Yeah. But it turns out that it was more of a fear of a conspiracy. He'd been told by a communist friend that in the New Zealand Army, his fellow troops would take him and other communist members out on a mission somewhere and execute them.
Right.
And he fully believed that. That was something that around the New Zealand communist circles, they believed if you join the army, you won't come back.
But the Navy, they won't do that.
Yeah, apparently not in the Navy. So I'm not sure why that would be. So this seems to be a conspiracy theory without merit, but he fully believed it. And refusing to join the army meant he was prosecuted and sent to a detention camp as a conscientious objector. During the war, Smith's camp began running very low on food. And people telling the story were like, in a war effort, the people who didn't want to fight, they were like a low priority for food. The soldiers and others were getting the food. So they were doing it pretty tough at the camp. Nearby was a river that was apparently one of the best trout fishing rivers in the world. Having found out Smith was a fisherman, the higher-ups at the camp got him to start fishing to help supplement their food supply. And before long, Smith had trained up a team of other prisoners to work with him to catch, prepare, and smoke 30 to 40 trout a day.
Whoa!
Teach a team of men to fish.
But the fishing they were doing was illegal, and it wasn't long before news got down to the bloody bigwigs down on Capitol Hill down in Wellington. So soon after, they started getting shipments of Smith smoked trout to Parliament House. So they didn't do anything about it.
Bribing them with fish.
Yeah, they're like, oh, send some of it. I'll take some of that fish.
Hey, you guys fishing?
Can I have some?
Go on. Yeah, exactly.
Can I have some?
Can I have some?
Smith found it all very humorous that he was a prisoner being asked to break the law by those keeping him a prisoner. He found it a bit ironic, and the whole situation probably further underlined the corrupt nature of the capitalist system in his mind.
Right.
He's like, that's it, these capos, breaking rules.
This is a very funny situation I'm in, just laughing himself to sleep at night in his prison
cell. That's so funny. Apparently he found it hilarious.
Every time he casts off, this is hilarious. Can't believe it. I haven't seen my family in years. This is so funny because of these corrupt capitalists. Very, very funny.
What are they like? When the war ended, Smith was released. He got a piece of land in Massey, a suburb in the northeast of Auckland, where he built a service station or a gas station. Yeah.
Yep. Petrol station.
Servo.
Convenience store.
Petroleum supplier. The Bowser.
Yeah, the Bowser.
According to his biographer, Brian Winters, I'll mention him later, but he ends up having a book written about him. He worked hard building up the business over the following 16 years before Caltex came in and invested. Don't know if they bought some of the land or they bought some of the business, but anyway, it meant that Smith now had money flowing in regularly. He nailed this investment of setting up this business because it set him up financially for life. This also opened up more free time for Smith, so he was able to direct more attention back to his passion, fishing.
Running the Bowser.
He does love the sea.
Yes.
But it wasn't the trout fishing that he loved, even though he was made to do it in the prison camp. He saw that as a style of fishing for the rich.
Oh, he prefers finding a puddle, dropping in a homemade hook,
yep,
and then getting a 3-inch long fish out, selling it for a penny.
100% that,
no,
yes.
He likes his little tiddlers.
He loved tiddler fishing. More accurately, what is known as coarse fishing. This is the style of fishing he grew up with. It's a term I hadn't heard before. Have you heard coarse fishing? C-O-A-R-S-E.
Coarse.
According to dictionary.com, coarse fish are a freshwater fish that is not a member of the salmon family. These toff fishes. Salmon and trout and those big.
So he likes the working class fish.
Yep, that's 100%. That's what this is about. Game fishing, on the other hand, is fishing for salmon and trout and these kind of fish. Wikipedia calls coarse fishing angling for freshwater fish, which are traditionally considered undesirable as a food or game fish.
Oh, okay.
So it's just to catch them. They're not for eating, but that's the kind of fishing you want to do. And a big part of it seems like it was because this was the working class fishing. There is, or at least used to be, this class divide between the two styles of fishing. It seems like there still is a little bit. The upper classes of Britain would be into game fishing. Coarse fishing was for the working class. Coarse fishers will catch all sorts of fish: rudd, roach, gudgeon, perch. All beautiful names.
Beautiful.
The problem was, for the most part, these kinds of fish didn't exist in the land of the long white cloud, New Zealand. So Smith went about changing this.
No, he didn't. Why?
This wasn't the first time someone had introduced fish to New Zealand. According to Mitchell, New Zealand has several dozen native freshwater fish, most of which are nocturnal, discreet, and tucked away in streams far from civilization. Few of them grow larger than 10 centimetres. They don't make for great angling. Recognising this, Early European settlers decided to bring their favourite sports fish with them, trout. Trout flourished in New Zealand's cooler waters with limited competition from the native species. The trout fishery is now so prosperous it attracts anglers from around the world. It's become like a big tourist industry for New Zealand. But this was all seemingly done legally. And according to the New Zealand government website, from the late 1800s, European settlers brought trout and salmon to New Zealand's lakes and rivers so they could fish them for sport. The most common species today are brown trout, rainbow trout, and Chinook salmon. All done legally, I think. And Smith saw this as a double standard. Introduced species of fish were okay as long as they were for rich people to fish. So on the one hand, it could be argued Smith's actions were ideological. On the other, perhaps he was just trying to recapture his childhood. Either way, his actions over the coming years would irreparably change New Zealand's waterways. According to Mitchell's article on Stuff, much like New Zealand's native land birds, its freshwater fish had evolved in an environment with few natural predators. New species can shake up an ecosystem that evolved in a delicate equilibrium, and in New Zealand, the result has been chaotic. It's interesting that apparently when the Europeans came to New Zealand, they were basically like, there's no fish here, pretty much. We need to fix this by giving them our great fish. And that's still not really seen as particularly controversial, but what he has done with these other kinds of fish is. So it's not as black and white as maybe it first seemed to me, even though it's pretty clear what he did was very wrong. But it's just weird that it's the salmon and the trout aren't seen in the same way.
And no one ever thought to do that with poisonous snakes.
No, and it's never happened.
Yeah. I can't believe you don't have red-bellied blacks out here. Well,
come on.
I'll sort that out. Release a couple of hundred into the bush.
And it's often done because it's one animal's released and they're like, oh, these got out of hand. We've got to release another one.
Yeah, it just spirals out of control.
That's what cane toads were meant to get the cane beetles in Australia. And that happened with different things over there. Apparently they released ferrets to try or stoats, which I've never even heard of, to combat the rabbits. But then they got out of hand and they were eating all the native birds. So, it all reminds me of Homer getting stuck in quicksand. You know, he's like, all right, I'm stuck. My legs are stuck. I'll get them out with my hands and I'll get my hands out with my face. At first, Smith went about it with a letter writing campaign. He was trying to convince people rather than do it sort of under the cover of darkness.
So, and who is he writing letters to?
To newspapers to be published.
And they're hoping that they'll write the headlines like "Gudgeons Needed" or something.
This one that I'll read out now was from pretty early on. He wrote, "If children are to become interested in wildlife, angling is part of their education. If the pond is made large enough with a sheltered area in the center, it could be stocked with rudd and tench to provide angling for the children. The right for children to fish is a part of basic human history. But there are those here who would like to make it otherwise. Over my dead body."
I have never fished.
Well,
not once.
He would find that really sad.
Entire life.
Neither have I.
Oh, actually, that's a complete lie. I have fished virtually on a couple of games on my Nintendo Switch.
Oh, well done. Did you catch anything?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah, gudgeon.
A couple of tiddlers.
Yeah, a couple of tiddlers.
None of the rich people stuff.
Yuck.
So over my dead body, I mean, you are coming across a little strong there, mate.
That started out like, hey, it's for the kids. Let's help them out.
It's a bit of fun.
And then has he written this in like cutout letters from other newspapers? Yeah. Like he's threatening them.
But he would sign off with his own name throughout the whole time. He'd own up to it.
Over my dead body, with love, Stuart Smith.
According to Marshall, though, attempts to bring in coarse fish were rebuffed, largely because they would compete with trout. So that just pissed him off even more.
Because he hates trout.
He hates trout.
Fuck you, trout.
But, I mean, there is that double standard there, but trout does have the use of being edible, right?
Yeah, edible does feel like a bonus.
Yeah.
A bonus.
You can just picture him with a dartboard with a picture of a trout on it.
Fuck you, trout. First, you took my wife.
it goes back, and it turns out
his wife left him for some trout.
She married a trout,
but they're very happy.
Oh, so happy!
They're the weirdos in their town, but
isn't that the thing though? Happy. Surely with hindsight, he can just be happy for her and the trout.
And the trout,
no. But no.
He still says, "Fuck you, trout."
Yeah, got an absolute vendetta. It's sad.
It is sad.
It's time to move on.
Gotta move on. Live your life.
Don't become a fish terrorist.
Don't become a fish terrorist.
Mate, this is not the way to get over it.
One bad fish. That's all it is, you know?
He's going to start writing letters. Fish. I didn't want to be a fish terrorist. You made me do this.
So by this stage, we're in the 1960s and Smith is into his 40s. As Radio New Zealand said, he never married. Well, we know why.
Yeah.
Fiance left him for a fish.
At the altar for a fish.
Yeah.
He never married, didn't have any kids. What he did have was time, money, and an almost fanatical level of devotion to his cause that he dedicated the entire second half of his life to a one-man mission, introducing coarse fishing to New Zealand. He probably found it pretty easy to import the fish in the early days. In the 60s, you could pretty much import any fish as long as it was for your home aquarium. You just had to be like, yeah, yeah, these weird fish that don't exist here, I'm just bringing them in for the
But I'm going to need 40,000.
Yeah. 40,000 tiddlers. My tank, 40 litres. So
should be nice and...
So squeeze them in like
that. That's 1,000 per litre. I'd be fine.
That'll be right.
40,000 tiddlers, please. Smith's home aquarium was massive. His setup was on an industrial level. He also outfitted his Ford Zephyr car with oxygenated fish tanks, basically making it a mobile aquarium.
That sounds like an episode of Pimp My Ride, where they come in, they're like, I'm going to install 18 fish tanks in your car.
That show is so dumb.
So ridiculous.
So all we've done is we've taken out the back seat and we've put in a couch.
Yeah, what do you
think? So you guys can just hang out.
You can hang out, but you can't legally drive it.
No, absolutely not. We've put in 18 TVs.
There's 18 TVs. Have you looked at the engine at all? Oh, no.
No.
At all.
We actually took that out to make room for this fish tank.
Yeah, check it out.
And in the boot, you got a barbecue.
Yeah, all right. You officially been pimped. All right.
Bye.
So the idea to get all these fish tanks, oxygenated fish tanks in his car meant that he could drive around the country offloading fish in different places.
Oh, my God.
And they'll stay alive for days while he drives around. According to Marshall, he would liberate the fish wherever he could, with or without the permission of landowners. He would recruit accomplices, sometimes adults, often children, in raids on farms, dams, and public waterways. He started with one of the most damaging coarse fish, perch. Perch were already in New Zealand, having been brought from Tasmania in the 1860s, and were predominantly found in Canterbury and Otago. They were not widespread for good reason. Perch are carnivorous and have a ravenous appetite. Not only do they eat other fish, but in certain circumstances, they eat each other. They just love eating fish.
Right.
I don't know why that was funny. They'll eat each other. That's funny.
Smith likely started with perch because he had an easy access to them. In 1905, a population had been legally introduced to Lake Rotoroa in Hamilton City and had survived. Smith, with the help of two local boys, took perch from the lake and spread them around Auckland. So there's a couple of little colonies of fish. It's probably not the word, is it?
Schools.
Few little, but basically they didn't exist in New Zealand. But he used this little one to get a start. So he went, fished a few out, enough to make a new school and chucked them in another spot. And then they apparently they breed real good.
And do you think, did he have any concerns that these fish could get out of control, they're carnivorous? Did he have any inkling that it could be a problem for the ecosystem?
Not really. He thought he was doing God's work.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
By just getting more fish.
Yeah.
For the kids to catch. Oh, they're going to get out of control? Yeah. Even better fishing then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. More kids need to get out and go fishing.
Yeah. Oh, you got a problem with me building new schools? Okay. Yeah. Capos.
Yeah.
Smith took extensive notes about his exploits, and these showed that he released hundreds of perch into the lakes of Auckland in the 1960s. According to Marshall, in 1965, Smith broadened his liberations to include tench. He started with four, which was enough to establish a breeding stock at what he called his office pond behind his garage. So he'd get them in, get eggs sometimes, and he'd breed them up and then release them. As his operation ramped up, Smith started breeding koi carp, gambusia, and golden orf. There's so many words I'm going to say wrong today. There's just four in a row.
Great. Awesome.
I'm pretty sure I'm saying Otago wrong, and I look forward to the tweets. But it was another fish that became Smith's signature, Rudd. Rudder are stocky freshwater fish with coarse skin and ruby red fins. They are prolific breeders, releasing thousands of eggs at a time. I guess the red, maybe that's why I liked them, the commie connection.
Yeah.
They primarily eat aquatic plants, preferring natives over exotics, meaning they share a diet with native freshwater species. For that reason, rudder sometimes called the possums of the waterways.
That's good. That's catchy. Really good.
I forget that because possums are native here, so it's kind of cool to see them around. But in New Zealand, they're like the most hated pest. I guess they were introduced from over here.
If you talk to my dad, they're the most hated pest.
Oh, here. Yeah.
Big time. Big time.
You know who I think is the biggest pest in Australia? Humans.
Oh, right. Here we go.
They do the most damage. Sorry to get political about that, but it needed to be said.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you for your bravery.
Thank you.
I'm offended, actually. So,
as a human.
On behalf of all humans.
There had been no rudd in the southern hemisphere until Smith liberated them into a pond at Wanui School north of Auckland in 1969.
Not in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Near Auckland, there's a lake called Lake Rototoa. Marshall continues, it is the largest, deepest lake in Auckland and for a while the only one dominated by native fish. Among its population were dwarf Inanaga and June Lake Galaxias, both of which are highly rare and on the brink of extinction. Then Smith started his liberations. In 1970, his notes show he liberated more than 100 rudd into Rototoa. They prospered, so much so that 30 years later, Smith returned with perch in an effort to control the rudd he'd unleashed.
Oh, my God.
He's like, there's too many now. So he's like, all right, before this gets out of hand, I'll just put in some more fish.
The perch are the ones that love eating fish.
Yeah.
But also get right out of control. Yeah, it was the kind of thing you just didn't know that that's, you're just releasing a different problem.
Yeah, you're not actually solving much there.
Marshall goes on, it proved to be a near fatal blow for the lake. Rudd, which feed on native macrophytes, reduced the lake's water quality. Then the perch started dominating the native species. Between 2003 and 2011, monitoring showed dwarf Inanga numbers had dropped by more than 99%.
Whoa.
And the species is now functionally extinct in the lake. Kura numbers had dropped by 90% and common bullies by 80%. So they're all native fish that have just been basically wiped out from the fish that he introduced.
Holy shit. It feels like he's obviously got a gift with fish for like raising them. Why wouldn't he turn to these fish that were not like, you know, capo fish?
Yeah,
they're
right.
Just native fish there that are already struggling. Why does he use his talent to foster
those?
It's
interesting, isn't it? You kind of wish that someone from the government or from one of the departments that looks after this took him in. And someone even was quoted as saying that. They never used him like they should. He's a guy you want inside the tent pissing out, not outside the tent pissing in. And he was outside the tent pissing in.
Yeah, pissing on every single tent.
But because he did this, I mean, it's got to be nostalgia, him bringing the fish from his childhood.
Yeah.
And an imperialist kind of thing as well. I'm bringing over proper English fish to this little colony that I've come to,
no.
I guess. I mean, I'm putting words into his mouth, but maybe that's what it feels like potentially. So the native fish numbers are dropping, and this is a very common story. When exotic animals are introduced, they often dominate as the native animals have evolved in a very specific ecosystem without competition all of a sudden. So they haven't built up the natural defense systems, so they're very vulnerable to being wiped out like they have here. Competition between native species is very balanced in an ecosystem, says Dr. Cindy Baker, a freshwater fish scientist at New Zealand's National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research. What a badass place to work. You'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty important. I'd feel so proud going to work. Not like here.
You hang your head in shame as you walk through that door. I'm here to talk about a fish terrorist. Sorry, everyone.
Introduced fish have a significant effect on New Zealand's freshwater biodiversity, Baker says, particularly in lakes from which they are hard to remove. I found that interesting because I would have thought lakes would have been easier because it's just one spot.
Yeah.
Whereas in a river, you're chasing them up and down. And it goes
hundreds of kilometers,
Smith was very proud of what he was doing, even writing letters to newspapers bragging about it, like I mentioned before. One time he wrote, I was delighted to read your article about the Waihau River becoming an angler's paradise. as no one seems to know why this happened. May I suggest the fact that in 1973 I liberated well over 2,000 rudd in that stretch of river? Maybe that could have been it.
Maybe.
It was already hard to root for him. Now I fucking hate him.
You just...
It's like delighted can't... people are enjoying fishing. Maybe if you'd listened a few years ago. Hey?
Well, guess what? I invented fishing.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, world.
You are
it's
welcome.
Funny because he kind of, for the most part, he just seems like he's gone about doing it. And he's doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
But also, everyone... Want a little pat on the back here.
Yeah. Huh? Would be good. I mean, also, I've had to introduce another species to the lake because my original fish have gotten crazily out of control. But still.
I'm a hero.
Pretty good.
That second one is also now out of control has wiped out.
Yeah, less delighted about that, to be honest. But
good fishing.
Good fishing.
Good fishing spot.
Yeah.
Although the fish have made the water quality a lot lower and it's probably leading to maybe all fish struggling. But.
Delighted.
He also kept extensive notes in his diary. His diaries detailed some of the ways he was able to smuggle the fish into the countries once authorities started clamping down on the importation.
I really hope it's up his shirt or something.
One of the ways he got through customs...
He dressed up as a pregnant lady. Fake belly. It's fish.
Full of fish.
It's fish.
Dressed up as a giant fish.
Little eggs. I'm like, guess that's normal.
Yeah.
I'm not a
seems
pregnancy
right.
expert.
It seems that you're having between 24 and 36 children in there.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, that'll be right.
Yeah.
I'm a medical miracle.
Yeah, thank you.
Little heartbeats. You can see that.
Yes, yeah, and I am delighted. And so is my partner.
So one of the common ways he would go about it would be to walk through customs with fish eggs in his pockets.
Okay.
It's pretty clever.
So he didn't even pretend to be a pregnant woman?
No, he didn't.
Idiot.
Where's the creativity?
My pockets are pregnant. In
just
a way.
Fish eggs in his pocket.
Fish eggs in his pocket. And he had a mate send him in the mail as well.
Okay.
In the following 2 decades, Smith went on to release more than 10,000 rudd, 2,300 tench, 1,000 perch, and hundreds of koi, goldfish, and orphe. And so that's what he released. He's growing that in his home tanks and then releasing 10,000. That 10,000, you know,
yeah, that's multiplying.
Exponentially multiplies. Marshall went on to say, although he typically avoided major waterways, likely because it increased the odds he would be seen, he still managed to populate them with fish. One strategy was to liberate fish into a nearby drain or stream, which, upon the next flood, would sweep fish into the river. So, I mean, it's a lot of, like you say, he's real clever. He fully understands
smart.
How it all works. Just get him inside pissing out. I mean, he's pissing either way.
I've
we know he's
to be
pissing.
Honest, I don't understand the analogy, but you both were like, yeah.
Yeah,
so
Jesse, you got to take a piss.
You got to take a piss. And this guy's got it's got a tiny bladder.
Yeah.
It's got a little tiddler of a bladder.
This guy pisses at fish.
Yeah.
Oh.
So do you want that fish coming out of the tent or going into the tent?
Why is there a tent?
Out of the tent.
Out of the tent.
Come on.
Is what you want.
Well, lock it in.
The department works out of a tent.
Okay.
Fish department.
That's a bit odd.
Despite not wanting to be caught, Smith continued to brag about his exploits. So in one way, he'll be like, I'm not going to do it too publicly and be caught, but I will then write a letter saying what I did.
Yeah, dear national newspaper.
He was even profiled in New Zealand newspapers a couple of times with his photo.
His address.
Rudd going well, sort of.
Oh, my God. Headline. And still people are like, where are all these fish coming from?
Around this time, authorities started noticing rudd in their waterways, a species never before seen in New Zealand. Due to Smith's openness, they had a pretty good idea of who was responsible.
Okay. Well, that's promising.
According to Marshall, not long afterwards, in 1974, Smith was prosecuted for the first time. His fish were destroyed, his tanks were poisoned, and his car was confiscated in his marine car.
Oh, no.
A setback which stopped his liberations for 4 years.
And so his tanks were poisoned, did you say?
Yeah, so they filled him with chlorine or lime juice or something.
That would have been hard for him.
Yeah, that would have been real rough. And or even worse for the fish.
Yeah, awful for the, yeah, sorry, should have got the fish as well. And the car, I mean...
How's he get from A to B now?
Yeah.
Exactly. He's going to get a bus Think about how many fish you can get in a bus.
Yeah.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. Now he's thinking.
Okay. Yeah,
he gets exhibit to pimp a bus.
So right, just after this happened, he wrote in his diary, "Fascism is long way from dead."
Fascism?
Fashion?
Fashion. Oh, they said fashion. Fashion is a long way from dead. Check out these kicks. All right.
They've got little fish in them.
Like disco stew style.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a goldfish in there. The fish is dead.
Let me
work out how to get him out.
I think there's seven words in that sentence, and I missed one, and I read one of them wrong. So I'll say it again.
Have a go.
Fascism is a long way from dead.
Okay.
Wow.
These people stopping me from bringing in killer fish?
Yeah.
Fascists.
Come on.
Despite the setback, he also had a bit of a win around the same time. In 1975, Rudd was declared acclimatised in Auckland and Waikato, according to Marshall, essentially recognising that it was here to stay. To this day, Auckland and Waikato is the only region where Rudd is established to the extent it is not considered noxious, a feat entirely due to Smith. So they're basically almost like the new natives, you know, they're just here now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like us and camels.
Yeah. Yeah. Brumbies.
We got heaps of them. Brumbies.
Yeah. Isn't it like Australia's got the most camels anywhere, in wild camels anywhere in the world? Or something weird like that?
Yeah. We got a lot. I don't think I've ever seen one. Have I seen a camel?
Never seen a camel.
Never seen a camel.
Come I don't know. Have
grow
I?
Up.
Surely.
Surely, right? Surely. I take that back.
Do you know what a camel is?
Yeah. It's a type of bag.
Yeah.
Yep. And we have more than anyone else in the wild.
During Smith's four-year break from releasing fish, he realized that some of those he'd previously released were spreading too quickly. And this is when, again, he would release more perch.
Right. Awesome. Problem solved.
Keep them under control. According to Marshall, it was at this point he started falling foul of his few allies. Not only had he returned to spreading perch, he was also releasing koi carp, a bottom feeder notorious for damaging waterways. He was talking about importing gudgeon and even flirted with bringing in pike, a ferocious carnivore likely to dominate any freshwater body it could find. As the decades passed, Smith was getting on in years. That's what happens. And driving around the country releasing fish was a young man's game. He turned his attention to one last big fish dump. This time, gudgeon, a species never seen before in New Zealand. It's not known how he smuggled the gudgeon into the country, but it is known that he bred a population of about 600 inside his tanks on his property. But according to Marshall, that was only the start of his plan. Smith had talked about this plan for a long time. He first mentioned it offhandedly in 1972 in a news article in the Auckland Star. But he's telling the journalists for their stories about it.
He must be one of the only terrorists to do that beforehand.
He's like the Babe Ruth of terrorism. Yeah. And then again in 1988, another news article, he mentioned it again, 16 years after the first time. But it wasn't clear how serious he was. In the twilight of his life, he had wanted to breed enough gudgeon, approximately 10,000, to fill a whole lake. It would have been horrific, one of the former officials who had knowledge of Smith's plan said. Luckily for New Zealand's waterways, the plan was foiled, with a raid on his property finding the gudgeon.
I was going to say, because he's had his tanks destroyed or whatever, taken away from him, and then he's obviously just built them back up.
Built it all
again.
Back up.
Are they not just keeping an eye on this guy as he writes letters saying, yeah, those bloody capitalists have come in and taken my tanks. Don't worry, I've got more tanks. If they came around now, they'd find 50 of them. Oh, hang on, I've said too much.
But don't. But if you're reading, this is not to be read by those capos.
Yeah, that's right.
So the raid found the gudgeon. According to Marshall, the day after the raid, gudgeon was declared a pest species, allowing them to be destroyed. Smith's tanks were again cleansed, leaving him with nothing. The resulting investigation couldn't find enough evidence that Smith had imported the fish, so he was not prosecuted. A biosecurity report into gudgeon later said they were considered likely to become widespread throughout New Zealand in all lowland freshwater systems and were ranked as having potentially high impacts on both native and introduced fish species that inhabit these environments. It's funny, the introduced fish species would be salmon and trout. They're like, we don't want it to have a...
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Tourism. is pretty big in that sort of area. So
we're still being sent to Capitol Hill. We love the taste of it.
Yeah. Smith did tell people he'd already released gudgeon in multiple waterways, but a search found no sign of the fish, and it is still unclear all these years later whether or not it happened.
He became like a serial killer, being like, oh, you think that's all I killed? Yeah. There's heaps out there. Go have a look in the forest. Smith, crazy.
Yeah. He took extensive notes, like I was mentioning in his diary, up until 1988. After one of these big raids, he's like, well, I'm not going to be leaving so much evidence anymore. It finally sort of, a journalist asked him apparently after that raid, are you going to keep doing this? And he's like, well, I really don't want to be getting caught doing this. he was winking.
Yeah, long answer. Short answer, absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah, check my tank. Check my car. Look at that.
Look at my backup tank.
Backup tank. In the shed behind my house.
He was fined $5,000, and there was $22,000 in fees he had to pay as well. The fish were destroyed, car and equipment all confiscated. He lost a couple of cars on different raids. Despite stopping with his note-taking, it is widely believed that he continued releasing introduced fish into the waterways. He just decided to no longer leave detailed accounts. From Marshall again, according to his own records, Smith was personally responsible for liberating more than 15,000 fish between 64 and 87 in hundreds of distinct locations. The vast majority were in the upper North Island between Rotorua and Kerikeri, but extend as far south as Christchurch. Apparently people would get in contact with him and like, hey, do you mind bringing some fish to my farm lake? And he'd be like, yeah. He'd just go around dropping them off and driving around giving people fish. What a life. In 2005, a boy walked past the garage and noticed a weird yabby-like creature in the gutter. He took it home to his dad. Well, I was trying to think of a word to describe it as. I said yabby, but I don't know how widespread they are. What would you... Are they crustaceans? Little sort of lobstery things.
Yeah.
Claws,
crayfishy.
Crayfishy.
Yeah.
Little.
Yabbies.
He took it home to his dad, and his dad called the authorities. It turned out to be a West Australian smooth marron, another species not found in New Zealand. And he has no nostalgic connection to them, I'm pretty sure.
Right. I thought that the dad had called the cops on his son, being like, you took that from someone else. That's stealing. Give it back. That's stealing.
Arrest my son.
Lock him up. The only way he'll learn is if he does 10 to 15 year stretch.
Honestly, release it into the waterways yourself, young man.
Yeah.
And maybe then we'll forgive you.
This yabby-like creature, what is it called again?
It's called a West Australian smooth marron. They kind of look like a big yabby kind of thing. And turned out Smith was still up to his old tricks at 92 years of age.
No. Oh, my God.
The resulting raid found Smith was preparing to go again. And apparently it was a 5 a.m. raid. He's out with his Zimmer frame. He's got new hips and stuff.
Oh, right. And they got the SWAT team in there.
Yeah.
Go, go, go.
The 30-man team. 30-person team. And, amazing that he was still doing it at 92. A biosecurity report prepared in the following months found marron had the ability to become widespread throughout New Zealand, invade many habitats, affect ecosystems and all levels of the food chain. It was a bomb ready to go off, another one that would have just gone
far
wild.
Out.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
But all good things must come to an end, and 3 years later, Smith passed away.
95.
Very, very good innings.
Great innings.
80 years in New Zealand after 15 in England. According to Marshall, following Smith's death in 2008, authorities returned to his lair to destroy whatever he had left in his tanks.
Lair's a bit strong, isn't it? I love lair.
I like Marshall's work there.
Yeah, that's good.
They expected to find more gudgeon, but didn't. Just a few schools of rudd. Jeez, he loved rudd. Rudd was his signature.
Oh, yeah.
Nevertheless, the tanks were drenched with a lime solution to destroy any trace of life, and a sucker truck dealt with the contaminated water, ending the complicated legacy of Stuart Smith.
What's a sucker truck?
Sucker truck. I assume it's what it sounds like. Truck that sucks.
Amazing.
Hey, your truck sucks.
You call that a truck? Call that a van.
Smith left behind a bunch of cash. He was still very wealthy all the way through because of that land deal. And in his will, he asked for a book to be written about his life, even giving the book a title.
Of course.
That Pommy Bastard. And that's what the book ended up being called.
Oh, so, I mean, I don't like it.
So this, the money that he left in the will went to an author to write something.
Yeah. And that writer was Brian Winters. So that book's out there available. And apparently it's a great read. I couldn't track it down, even to buy, but it's out there and it got a lot of attention when it came out a few years ago. To write the book, he went through the extensive notes Smith himself left behind, as well as interviewing friends and foes of Smith. So he got both sides. It was supposedly it's quite an impartial story, but you can tell that Winters kind of feels for him a bit.
Yeah.
Winters would later say of Smith, he enjoyed fishing and genuinely felt that spreading these fish around was going to benefit people. I don't think he approached it like some evil ogre thinking, I'm going to do harm to New Zealand by doing this. Summing up, Marshall wrote, in his writing, Smith often talked about the joy of fishing, particularly for children. He believed New Zealand was deficient in this sense, apart from eels, which he believed were too scary and snake-like for kids. There was no way for a child to grow up fishing in the way that he did. Isn't that the idea of, this is how I grew up. This is how I did it. So this is the right way.
And I really loved it. Like there were definitely kids who hated or just found it boring.
Yeah, people who take their life experience and extrapolate it to be like, this is a universal what I went through. It's obviously some sort of, it's something we have in us, but it's something that's worth realizing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not necessarily the case. You like fishing and that's cool,
that's
man.
That's great, man.
Good on
like
you.
I like skateboarding.
Well, that's why I'm releasing 1,000 skateboards into the wild. Curiously, Smith himself was not a regular angler in later years, even though an entire coarse fishing subculture had emerged in his wake. So it's out there now that coarse fishing has become a thing in New Zealand.
So he was successful.
He was successful
in that way.
Yeah. He came to some of our meetings. He was very well read and didn't suffer fools gladly, said John Josseville, a founding member of the West Auckland Coarse Fishing Club, which began in the early 1980s. He didn't do a lot of fishing himself for enjoyment or pleasure, but he loved it and he would come to the meetings and that sort of stuff. And he's still advancing his cause from beyond the grave. Every couple of years, several coarse fishing clubs receive a $5,000 donation from the S. Smith Trust. And last year, the West Auckland Club received $10,000. It pays for trophies and catering and stationery and other things that keep the club going.
Wow. Does the trophy just say, you're welcome? Yeah. Having fun fishing? Yeah. I did that.
I made that happen.
So it's a, to me, it was, a, I knew nothing of that.
Heard any about that.
No.
Because nearly always it feels like it's a mistake when a species is introduced and gets out of hand. Like I was saying before, the cane toad to fix the cane beetle, or someone releases a few rabbits to hunt and they go, they spread real quick. Famously now, bunnies do that. But back then, apparently, they didn't know that. So it's funny to hear of a guy who's just slowly done it meticulously over decades.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Tens of thousands.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it sounds like he caused a hell of a lot of damage.
Yeah, and it'll never be the same again.
Just because of one person.
Amazing.
That is insane.
Mm.
I don't know how I feel about him. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not sure. Because I don't know. He saw himself as the underdog fighting for the people.
But it sounds like he had no remorse even when he started seeing things get out of control.
Right.
Like, I better rethink this.
Yeah.
More like, I'll gudgeon, I'll do.
He was very sort of blinkers on, narrow-minded.
Very, like, obsessed.
Only saw the positives of his introductions.
Yeah,
because he saw it as there were conspiracies. Anyone against him was working for the salmon industry and that sort of stuff.
Right. Big salmon.
Very paranoid person.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a tiddler.
Yep.
With a big story. Yeah, cool. So, I didn't say who suggested it. Phil, while I find his name.
Do not take that camera off me. Okay, Okay, now you can take the camera off.
Wait, don't stop.
Don't stop the music.
No, it's going to be stuck in everyone's heads for the rest of the...
I think that's happened already.
Their lives.
Give us something that'll get it out of our heads again.
Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. That's worse.
That's worse. That's like a gudgeon.
You know what will never get stuck in your head? Australia's all in. Who's ever had the national anthem stuck in their head?
No, never.
Never.
Okay, it was suggested by Clara in Edinburgh.
Okay. End of list.
Clara titled it Stuart Smith, Liberator of 15,000 Fish.
That got your attention,
right? That got my attention.
Yeah.
I was just searching for New Zealand, to be honest, but that did get my attention. Liberator.
Liberator, I'm listening.
I do love the idea of them calling him the great liberator when really he's got fish, put them in a really small tank, and then release them, being like, and also saying to the fish, "You're welcome.
I've liberated them from the small tank I put them in.
Yeah,
after breeding them from eggs that I had in my pocket. It's so funny. I'm sweating. He's walking through
with fish eggs.
Anything
fish
to declare, eggs. Sir?
I'm just picturing him loose.
Yeah.
Loose in his pocket, getting a little bit of lint on him.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Oh, sitting next to him for 15 hours on a flight.
What are you imagining it smells like?
Oh.
Fishy?
It smells or fishy, eggy? But also eggy,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, those are the two worst ones.
The two worst smells, yeah.
No, thank
Damn.
You.
Damn.
But it sounds like he got away with it.
Yeah, well, he lived a long life and he didn't really get particularly punished.
Oh, yeah. That was a great story. I knew absolutely nothing about that.
Yeah, I love when you hear a tale and you've never heard anything about it before.
Yeah, and you don't know where it's going to go.
It's so close.
So close. You think that'd be quite famous.
Yeah, I really would have thought he'd be like an infamous guy. People would be like, oh, don't be a bloody Stuart Smith.
Yeah, because that's such a rare thing, right? I've never heard of eco-terrorism on that scale.
Yeah,
no. Fish terrorism.
Decades
is funny.
Of solo activity.
Do you reckon it's just like Kiwis being so too polite to really clamp down? You know, they're like, honestly, mate, can you please stop?
They Come are on. So friendly.
They're so friendly.
Insanely nice.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you jump in, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God. Now it's time for everyone's favorite section of the show, the fact, quote, or question section. It's got a little jingle that goes something like this. Fact, quote, or question, ding. He always remembers the ding. Yes, I'm doing this by myself this week. The other two, turns out, aren't as dedicated to this show
as I am. That's not really true. It's just Christmas holidays. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so the way this works is if you get involved at patreon.com/dogoonpod on the Sydney Scheinberg Lux Memorial Package Edition, rest in peace, then you can get involved by giving us a fact, a quote, or a question. You also get to give yourself a title, and then we go through a few of these at the end of each episode. This week, the first one comes from Austin Horst, and Austin's given themselves the nickname or the title of the General Truck Driver, which was actually given to him by Jess on episode 263. There you go. And Austin asks a question. 2020 has definitely not been the year I was expecting, but you guys have definitely been one of the highlights. The live streams have been real fun. I've luckily not been too affected by COVID, but one of the things that I've missed most this year is live shows. My question is, what is each of your favorite live show, concert, comedy, etc., that you've attended? Sorry, Austin, that I'm the only one who's answering this. I think maybe my favorite ever show was possibly earlier this year in 2020 before COVID really hit, I think. It was Cold Chisel out in Geelong, and they were supported by Paul Kelly, and it was amazing. It was one of the, yeah, I reckon the best rock show I've ever been to. The other one I think of is when I saw Tism do a secret show to warm up for one of their last tours. I saw them at the Tote. It's probably like 15 years ago, and it was amazing as well. So they're the two that come to mind. Sorry that the others aren't here to answer that. I reckon Jess would say a Paul Kelly show probably, and Dave would say the Smiths if he ever saw them, which he wouldn't have. Maybe saw Morrissey. I don't know. I'd love to know that about them as well. Sorry that they're not here to answer it. But Austin does let us know his favorite was seeing Foo Fighters at Firefly Music Festival in 2014. Their set was amazing, and when they came out for their encore, Dave announced that for the next five songs, they weren't the Foo Fighters. He said that they were now a bar cover band called the Holy Shits. A big banner dropped behind the band, and they proceeded to play a killer set of Alice Cooper's School's Out, Van Halen's Ain't Talking About Love, The Rolling Stones' Miss You, and Queen's Under Pressure. Then they closed the show with Everlong. Cheers, guys. He's hoping 2021 goes a bit better than 2020. Cheers to you, Austin. Thanks for your support. Thanks for that question. If you ask again, feel free to ask that of Dave and Jess specifically. Jeez, I'm lying in bed. So if any of my pronunciations seem lazy, that's why. This next one comes from Drew Forsberg. He's also asking a question, but let's see what title he's given himself first. Rice President. it's so silly. Cheers, Drew. And Drew's question is, I happen to have a keen interest in learning facts about 1966 in North Carolina, especially regarding athletic history. Is there a podcast you can recommend for me to hopefully broaden my knowledge on these subjects? Oh, Drew, you've got lucky here that I'm the one left, because I know some really good facts about these, and I don't know that Dave and Jess do. 1966 is actually the year that the St. Kilda Football Club won their one and only VFL/AFL premiership. So far, I should say. There's a little asterisk there. Any year now, the second cup will be coming, and that obviously excludes the Wizard Cup and other preseason and night grand final premierships that we've won, you know. 1966, also the year that English football brought it home, the World Cup, that is. And I think there was another fact I read about recently. I think the Chicago Bulls maybe were, maybe that was the year they were founded. Let me Google this. Chicago Bulls. Yeah, 1966. Hey? And that links nicely into my next fact, which is about North Carolina. Did you know this? Apparently, their fire engines or something are blue and other ones are red. Also, Michael Jordan played there and he wore his North Carolina University shorts under his Chicago Bulls shorts, meaning they had to get bigger shorts for Chicago Bulls. And then all the other players started copying and they all got big baggy shorts. That has come full circle now and they're wearing short shorts again. Fashion, huh? It's amazing. But yeah, thanks, Drew. Thanks for taking me on a walk down memory lane there. Appreciate that very much. This one comes from Julian Barnes. Julian is the second chair triangle player for the Do Go On in-studio orchestra. Just in case they forget the ding, which we never do, but it is handy to have you there as backup. Thank you so much, Julian Barnes. Julian also has a question, and his question is, welcome to Do Go Oven, the Do Go On cooking special episode. We join Matt, Jess, and Dave, each cooking their own signature dish for our live studio audience. What are you making for us today, guys? Okay, well, I know Dave would be making some sort of bean-related thing. Probably a bean pie, combining his two loves. Baked beans in a pie. Can it be done? Dave's going to find out. He's not the man to find out. He will almost definitely set the kitchen on fire. Jess, ooh, what would Jess be cooking? She can cook. I know she has... she likes to cook Mexican sometimes. So I'm going to say she's cooking some sort of burrito with margaritas. And I'll be cooking... What do I want to cook? I'm going to cook one of those cakes that says multiple layers and they're red, white, black. Colors of the saints. So you got red and that is going to be hot chili cake, then you got white, sort of like a vanilla cake, and then black. What's a black food? I guess like a coffee, really heavily roasted coffee, or maybe even stout beer flavored cake. Huh? That's a showstopper right there. And then thanks for that question, Julian. And finally, we've got Tessa Chilcott, who is, of course, the president of Useful Solutions to Problems Requiring Creative Thinking. Wow. That's a really handy person to have around. And Tessa has given us a quote, and her quote is the most commonly used quote of 2020. You're on mute. Or, ah, you're frozen, aren't you? Bless Zoom. Thank you, Tessa. Hopefully those quotes don't need to be used too much from next year. The other thing we like to do is shout out to a few other of our Patreon supporters. Jess normally comes up with a game, and as she isn't here, I thought probably the game she might have come up with would have been where we would take an animal from our Patreon supporters' hometown, or at least home country, and introduce them in large numbers to the New Zealand waterways. Okay, so first up, I'd love to thank from Swansea in Great Britain, it's Sarah John Jones. Sarah John Jones. Sorry for the wait, Sarah John. He's been a patron for a long time, and due to my stupid system here, it slipped through. I don't want to blame Patreon for their spreadsheet being a bit out of whack, but look, I'm gonna blame them for it because it is their fault. Okay, so Swansea is in Wales, and I'm looking at Welsh wildlife, and apparently they got dolphins there. So we're gonna introduce dolphins from Wales into the waterways of New Zealand. Huh? You reckon the trouts are doing well? Well, I reckon these dolphins are going to dominate. Absolutely eat up all that gudgeon. Gudgeon's a fun word. Thank you so much, Sarah John Jones. I'll only do a few. We normally do 9 of these at the end of an episode, but because I'm doing it solo, I might maybe just do 3. How does that sound? Does that make sense? All right. So I think dolphins would do great. It's about time New Zealand had some dolphins in their lakes. They've probably got them around the oceans, but any in the lakes? I don't know. I don't think so. The next one, next patron I'd love to thank is from Nuevo in MI, which I reckon is Mississippi, Michigan. I'll find that out in a second. But it is Scott Lanning. Thank you so much for your support, Scott Lanning. We appreciate that very much. I'm looking up Nuevo MI is in Michigan. Nuevo, Michigan. All right. I wonder if Michigan's got any sort of animals. It's got notable people, including Roy Bargey, composer and pianist, and Jack Nitzsche, musician and arranger. Hey, a couple of notable people there. All right, I'm going to look up Michigan fauna. Let's see what they've got here. List of fauna in Michigan. A Wikipedia page. Fantastic. All right. Crustaceans. Diptera. Hemiptera. I don't know what any. They've listed it all in bloody Latin. Mollusks. All right. Oh, here we go. Blue dasher. Let's see what this is. All right. So, a blue dasher. It is the only species of the genus Pachydiplax. It is very common and widely distributed through North America and into the Bahamas, but in particular in Michigan. And they're dragonflies. Great. And they blue dashers live near still, calm bodies of water, such as ponds, marshes, slow-moving waterways and ditches. Oh, these are going to take off. These are absolutely going to ruin New Zealand. The blue dasher with a fantastic name. And yeah, Scott Lanning is going to dedicate his life to making that happen. He's going to be dropping them off by the bag load. He's going to be taking blue dasher eggs in the pockets of his pants and breeding them out the back of his petrol station. Good work, Scott. You're really going to absolutely destroy some stuff. Well done. And finally, let's see, who's my final shout out going to be today? Scrolling down. Final one for today is Connor Simmer from Atascadero in California in the United States. All right, let's see. Californian. Is this fun? Hearing someone Google in real time? Californian fauna. Californian fauna is fun to say. Fauna of California. All right. Okay, so finally, we are going to be dropping off. Or not we, sorry, of course. This will not be we. This will be Connor Simmer. We'll be dropping off black bears into the waterways of New Zealand. Black bears. Oh, now the dolphins are in trouble. I don't know how well these dragonflies are going to do. Black bears. Yeah, they're gonna change things up a bit. I've seen them swim. But what Connor's going to do is he's going to introduce them as an aquatic bear. First aquatic bear in New Zealand. I think they haven't had an aquatic bear before, but, well, they do now. So good work there, Connor. And, yeah, New Zealand, you've got some really exciting things to look forward to with dolphins, blue dashers, and black bears coming right up. Maybe black bear could be the cake, the black strip of the cake that I have in my St. Kilda layer cake. Anyway, and finally, what we like to do is it's bringing people into the Triptych Club, but maybe I should save this for when Dave and Jess are around. I wish you could answer me. Some of you are saying, yes, please, just save it for then. And others say, no, Matt, we want to hear it now. Let us in. I know who it is. I may as well do it because it's 3 years today since they signed up. So the way you get involved in the Triptych Club is if you're signed up for 3 years plus on the shout-out level or above, you get inducted into the Triptych Club. And the way this works is I'm going to have to play all these parts. Normally, Dave hypes you up and then Jess hypes up Dave. And I'm at the door. I'm lifting the velvet rope, letting you into the club. I've got the door list, right? And Jess comes up with a cocktail and an hors d'oeuvre. And Dave normally books a band. Dave, who've booked this week, we've booked Fish, which makes sense. The band Fish are playing live in the Triptych Club. Jess, who, what kind of hors d'oeuvres have you got? What kind of cocktails? Shrimp cocktail. Okay, that makes sense. I don't know what that is, but that makes sense. I also don't know really who the band Fish are, but that feels right. And fish cocktail, which feels like a food thing and a cocktail in one. So that's done. So nothing left to do now but to bring in this week's inductee, which is from Victoria, Australia, in Sea Lake. It's Bron. Hey, Bron, more like, Bron is, have a nice time in here, Bron. Woo, yes. Good work. I'm absolutely losing my mind. All right, so that, hey, Bron, hopefully that's all you ever dreamed of with your Triptych induction. But that is all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for listening in, everybody. We'll be back next week with a great report from Jess Perkins. Until then, we're on social media and all that sort of stuff. Do Go On Pod. DoGoOnPod.com is our website. Patreon is DoGoOnPod.com/DoGoOnPod. Wait, hang on. Patreon.com/DoGoOnPod. And hey. Get in touch. Hope you have a great Christmas and end of year. It's sad to see the end of 2020. It was a fantastic year, as I predicted early on in an early episode. I stand by that. Anyhow, until next week, we'll see you all laters. Goodbye. Laters.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.